You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. It's springtime in Australia, and with the changing of the season, new life starts blossoming everywhere, and your computer is no different. This season sees two new operating systems roll out, the long-anticipated launch of Microsoft's Windows 7 and Apple's new cat, Snow Leopard. For those of you thinking of upgrading your hardware, or maybe even purchasing a new laptop or desktop, now is the time. And for those of us who have been holding off, the wait is almost over. In the case of Microsoft, Vista has been a dog of an operating system. It started life at about the same time that Apple's OS X hit the streets, so the pressure was on for Microsoft to release something of its own in the marketplace around the same time. Many have speculated that because of the rush, Vista ended up being a half-finished operating system, which was heavy on resources. At the time of its launch, there were very few machines that could do the operating system justice. In the Apple camp, OS X gave Mac users a seamless upgrade from an operational point of view as well as a functionality point of view. It was the time of change for Apple as it welcomed Intel into the fold. OS X was an operating system designed to win customers over from Microsoft, and this it did. So has the Windows 7 wait been worth it? Well, it's too early to call at the moment, as the Pride of the Fleet for Microsoft has just been released to industry professionals, with the public release scheduled for October 22. The true indication of the success of the system will only be known after that. Back to the Leopard, this release seems to be an engineering update, with lots of changes from an operational point of view as opposed to a user experience. And as for the price of the upgrade, well, there's cheap and cheaper, something that Apple is not normally known for. For owners of Intel-based Macs who are still using the old Tiger version of the Mac OS, Apple is officially making Snow Leopard available in a box set that includes other software and costs $169. The reasoning is that these folks have never paid the $129 back in 2007 to upgrade to Leopard. But here's a tip. Apple concedes that the $29 Snow Leopard upgrade will work properly on these Tiger-equipped Macs, so you can save the extra $140. Who said being an early adopter wouldn't pay? And the Windows 7 upgrade? Retail prices for Windows 7 in Australia will be broadly similar to those charged for Vista. Home Premium will be $299, Professional $499, and Ultimate at $469. Upgrade prices will be $199, $399 and $429 respectively. In an apparent attempt to avoid customers delaying new PCs until Windows 7 ships on October 22, Microsoft has announced that a Windows 7 upgrade option will be available in Australia. So the pricing winner for this round is definitely Apple's Snow Leopard. Who would have thought?
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner takes us riverside for his thoughts on the new cat with Macworld podcaster Anthony Caruana. Telstra turns to Twitter for customer support. Now we are tweeting. Nokia has unveiled its first phone running on Linux software. And let the game console price war begin. Microsoft's Xbox is now $100 cheaper in Australia. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Qantas IT cull hits 1,000 over a decade, Facebook tightens privacy policies, Apple says it's not to blame for exploding iPhones, and UK file sharers' TV tastes revealed. This is Tech Talk News. James Murdoch launched a stinging attack against the British government last week. The head of News Corporation's businesses in Europe and Asia blamed his company's woes on the UK's broadcasting laws. He was also scathing about Britain's public broadcaster, the BBC, which he said had become so big that commercial broadcasters could no longer compete. James Murdoch wants the British government to butt out of broadcasting. He's having a hard enough time making a buck without having the UK's regulators frustrating his efforts to turn red ink into black.
The consensus appears to be that creationism, the belief in a managed process with an omniscient authority, is the only way to achieve successful outcomes. There's general agreement that the natural operation of the market is inadequate and that a better outcome can be achieved through the wisdom and activity of governments and of regulators. Now, it's true that none of the markets that I've a little experience of is completely happy. But there are things to welcome. The regulatory professionalism of Germany, the growth opportunities of India. Even France outdoes us in its robust defense of intellectual property. The problem with the UK is that it's unhappy in every way. It's the Adams family of world media.
News Corporation, which James Murdoch runs in Europe and Asia, owns 17% of Britain's ITV, the biggest commercial broadcaster in the UK. But the government isn't happy with the competition aspects of the investment and is forcing News to get rid of the stake. But by far the company's biggest gripe is the BBC. While News Corporation worldwide lost $4 billion last year, Britain's public broadcaster was given more than $9 billion by the taxpayer. Qantas has shed more than 1,000 jobs in information technology in the past 12 years, mainly as a result of outsourcing arrangements, a move slammed by unions. In 1997, Qantas IT comprised over 1,400 people. Today, they have around 375 employees. In 2004, Qantas embarked on a major IT outsourcing drive with IBM and Telstra, worth more than $1 billion. And last week, Qantas revealed it would cull about 200 IT positions as part of an outsourcing deal with IBM. David Hall, Qantas's Corporate Services and Technology Executive Manager, declined to reveal the exact number of workers affected by the IBM takeover, as both parties were in the final stages of negotiations. Facebook, the world's largest online social network, has bowed to pressure and agreed to tighten up its privacy policies further. Privacy has been a central, often thorny issue because so many people use Facebook to share personal information with their friends and family. The company will give its 250 million users more control over their personal information they share with third-party applications, such as games and quizzes, and will clarify what happens to data when a user deactivates an account. Currently, people who use such third-party software have to agree to share all their personal details with the application. With the changes, the application developer will have to specify which categories of data the software needs, for instance, birthdays or geographic locations, so users can give explicit permission. Users will also have to specifically approve any access Facebook applications have to their friends' information. Such access would still be subject to the friend's privacy and application settings. Apple's iPhone may be the darling of the mobile phone industry right now, but some users in France aren't singing its praises, claiming that the device explodes or cracks without warning. However, after conducting an internal investigation into the cause of broken touchscreen glass, Apple denies that there is an underlying iPhone flaw. In fact, Apple said that in all cases it investigated, some kind of force was applied to the iPhone, causing the glass to break. Apple said that the iPhones with broken glass that they analysed to date show that in all cases, the glass cracked due to an external force that was applied to the iPhone. Last Tuesday, in response to the European Commission's investigations into accusations of overheating and exploding iPhones, Apple referred to its internal investigation, saying that they were waiting to receive the iPhones from the customers. As part of its investigation, Apple also looked into complaints of the iPhone battery overheating, but again said it found no problems. In a statement, Apple said, "To date, there are no confirmed battery overheating incidents for the iPhone 3GS, and the number of reports we are investigating is in the single digits." And finally this week, researchers revealed millions of TV viewers are now using file-sharing services to access free and unauthorized copies of programs. According to research firm Big Champagne, US drama Heroes was the most popular illegal download this year. About 55 million people downloaded the show, while 51 million chose to access Lost, the second most popular show. Visits to leading torrent sites, which index video and music files, have also nearly doubled in the last year. And the research shows that the proportion of file sharing involving films and television, rather than music, is continuing to rise. Eric Garland, chief executive of Big Champagne, said, "Millions of television viewers now access free, unauthorized versions of favorite shows, at least some of the time." He went on to say that this is a socially unacceptable form of casual piracy, and it is replacing viewing hours. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Remember me?
We brought back to the family car. I hope it hasn't got too many dents.
You've had an interesting 2 weeks, I hear.
Fedora 11 is the operating system.
Your friends can give people permission to access your stuff.
Can you get a high-definition TV receiver all on a USB stick now?
And red horns?
Well, Andrew drew red horns on it on the website.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Optus knows about that.
No, they don't. No.
I don't even understand how that can be legal.
In other interesting news, one of Sol's henchmen. Henchmen? Is that the right word?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The move could actually help what they described as the digitally illiterate.
The kind of thing a Star Trek ensign would hand to the captain listing the week's duty roster.
Every couple of weeks, Apple tries to install Safari on my machine, even though I haven't got it.
Interesting little crack in your back pocket there.
So to speak.
So to speak, yeah. So I knew you'd draw that to everyone's attention, but that's what you do.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, here we are again. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me this evening is Dr. Graham and Dr. Adam, because Dr. Ron's AWOL this evening, absent without leave. He was even noticeably absent on the news tonight. But anyway, how are you, Graham? How are you, Adam?
Good. Yeah. Coming in off the bench to fill in for Dr. Ron.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Looking forward to a big final series.
Yeah,
you're only as good as your last podcast.
As they say in the classics, yes, as good as your last podcast. Yeah, well, anyway, he's
got something better to do, has he?
Yeah, he had a better offer and felt he needed to oblige. So, but then again, we've
had
times off, so he won't be with us this evening. But he'll be listening. We know he'll be listening because that's what he does.
Hello, Dr. Ron out there.
So, Adam, thank you very much for filling in at such short notice and popping upon us. It's good we can have a view from the couch and a view from the other side of the bench this evening.
Yes.
So. Oh, good. And what a week it's been, gentlemen.
What a big week it's been in technology.
Absolutely.
Since we're going with the cliches.
A big week in technology.
Too much tech is barely enough.
That's the one.
coming up to the grand final of October 22. That's just a few other dates probably coming up. But no, we've had Windows 7 now released to industry professionals, which is good.
Yeah.
You and I have probably both been putting it through its paces there, Graham. I know.
Absolutely,
I have.
Absolutely, yep.
And Leopard, the last of the cats, has made its debut in the Apple
phone. Snow Leopard.
I think, Adam, you have the view from the couch has been down from the banks of the Yarra talking about the Leopard.
After the view from the couch, ask me what I think of Snow Leopard.
Okay.
After the view from the couch.
We probably should keep all of our good operating system stuff till down after there, because lots and lots to talk about tonight. Mm. So I'm so excited about Windows 7. I've never been excited about an operating system before, but this one...
It's an odd feeling after...
It's creepy.
This one did some really amazing things on the weekend. I can't wait to share it with everybody. So
it took us a long, long time to warm up to Windows XP when it came out. It took us, what, 2 or 3 years to warm up to that?
Yep.
And Vista we never warmed up to. It's
No one
wants to touch Vista. And now Windows 7's come out.
Windows 7's just making F-disk everywhere.
We're installing it straight away, and we're enjoying using our computers. It's remarkable.
The thing that bothers me, though, is a lot of people did get this excited about the release candidates of Vista. Release candidates of Vista did look pretty good. But I'm guessing what happened at the time is when you installed something that didn't work, you said, oh, okay, that's a release candidate, I'll forgive that. But then when they came out with the final version, still nothing
was still
compatible with it. And people were like, it's not the release candidate anymore.
Now, you make a good point about compatibility. I think that it's not just Microsoft this time that have learned from the bad experience with Vista. I think a lot of the hardware manufacturers and all those other sorts of people have learned and have got drivers ready. And there's a lot more driver support out there than there was. And also, the Windows Update support is much better for Windows 7 than it was for Vista when it came out too.
I think the key thing to that is that Microsoft have set out to make sure that anything that works with Vista should work with Windows 7. So in theory, they shouldn't need to put out for new drivers. They've been preparing for Windows 7 ever since they started preparing for Vista.
Yeah, so in a lot of cases, if there isn't a specific Windows 7 driver, you can just grab the Vista one and it'll work.
Yeah, it'll work. So there's you shouldn't have to wait for... Everything should pretty much work out of the box. And then the best thing is for the high-end, the enterprise versions, you can actually run a virtual copy of Windows XP in the background to run old applications on that don't want to run on Windows 7. So you've sort of got the best of both worlds, and you can take the leap without having to worry as much about, oh, but I've got that one application that'll only run on Windows whatever. You can do that.
I haven't had to try that one yet.
I haven't tried it. I haven't tried that feature.
The interesting thing is, though, I haven't had to try it.
No, neither. That's why I haven't tried it, because I haven't found anything that doesn't work yet.
Yeah.
There's one instance which I had with the new Windows 7. I have an old Canon printer, just an old Bubblejet, i865, which lives on an IP network printer.
Yeah.
So it's not connected to anything. It's just connected via an IP address, buried in the kitchen laundry cupboardy type sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, yes, what happened was loading up Windows 7, I've sort of gone to print and go, oh, damn, I've forgotten to load this printer driver. Here we go.
It's unlikely you'd need one.
Well, I did. I did need a printer driver for it. It wasn't
For the printer itself.
Not
for the print server. The print server...
No, the print server was fine.
The print server will either talk LPR or...
it did.
What's the HP one? But yeah.
It was fine. The print server was fine. It could talk to that. Anyway, the actual printer itself, it came up with the traditional Windows print dialog box and says, do you have a driver, insert disk now, or check online?
Okay, but this is an old Windows printer, update. So you don't need to have a disk. So there's probably one built into Windows.
No, there isn't. But what happened was I checked in the Windows default drivers under the Canon tab. No. Nothing to be seen there.
I've had a very similar experience to you, actually.
Have disk. Okay, here's the old disk. Good luck. Put disk in. Said, can't find driver.
Cool. Yeah.
And then
then you clicked the online
Then I clicked the Windows update, online section.
And the thing that never worked before.
That's exactly right. And it worked this time.
The biggest waste of time ever is clicking that button.
Not anymore.
I thought... Because I was a skeptical person like you boys were. I've gone, here we go, this will be good. It'll spin wheels for 7 minutes and come back and say, no, sorry, no driver or whatever. But no, credit to the service, wherever it talked to the Windows Update server or whatever, it found the driver for the i865 and installed it, and it was working within all of about 2 minutes.
I had exactly the same experience with my LaserJet 6L at home, which, no support for it on the CD that Windows 7 came on, but... Just click that Windows Update button in the beside the Have Disk button, and went off. Didn't even have to select it. It found it. It knew what it was. It was beautiful.
It was good. A nice experience first up for Windows.
Yeah.
On the other side of the coin, I have an application called Adobe Audition version 3, which I use.
Yeah.
Says wrong OS, won't install.
Ooh, really?
Audio editing thing. But anyway,
installed on mine. Okay.
Oh, really? Well, I'll try it again later. We'll see what happens. But no, I went for the installer trial version.
You can tell that it installed on mine okay by the fact that the podcast came out last week.
Oh, excellent.
Is there something you can tick to say run in Vista mode or XP mode or something like that?
No, it just came up and said wrong OS.
Yeah.
Unsupported OS. So, anyway.
That's a dope for you.
That's my only negative experience so far. But we've got lots more to talk about, and we'll do that after View from the Couch when we get into our operating segments, I guess. So, if you want to come and say good day, chat.techtalkradio.com.au is our online chat. You don't have to register. Just come in and say good day. There's a few guys in. The normal guys are there. G'day, Warlock and Brad and Stryker. They're there at the moment. So, yeah, come along and say good day. All right.
You better explain why we don't have a webcam.
Oh, yeah, no Ustream tonight.
No Ustream tonight because the television guru is not with us this evening.
Dr. Ron's
not here and JD isn't here.
No.
And it's one of them that usually does it.
Either or. Yes. So there's no Ustream this evening. So if you're, as that comment says, where's that slacker, Dr. Ron? He's out doing...
We actually get a night of not having cameras shoved in our faces and all
it's
that.
A nice
I wore my
change.
Bulldogs t-shirt and everything because we're in the finals and it's not going to be on the video.
Absolutely. That was a good win on the weekend. But yeah, hey, that's not a footy show. It's another time, another place.
Yeah, we're definitely not talking football in the show.
No, that's true, isn't it? Great. anyway, let's talk a bit of technology. Telstra, the incumbent telco in this lovely country of ours, has turned to Twitter for customer support. as the everyone's made a bit of a fun and game in the media. Now we are tweeting. The telco basically decided to go off and find whoever it was who had the Twitter account for Telstra. And obviously hit them over the head with a big writ or whatever you do these days.
Send when the
you
boys
cyber,
around.
Yeah, when you cyber squat. Anyway, sometime later they came back and successfully managed to take control of the Twitter account for Telstra. Anyway, they're now tweeting. So you can tweet general questions to the Telstra people. They're the same guys that used to do the at Big Pond, you know, when you wanted to query them about your internet or some connecting up online. These guys have just been trained up a bit, apparently, on the wonders of general Telstra products, and they'll be there between 9 and 5.
Remember what we said before questions. About how that useless button used to be in Windows, get me help online?
Yeah.
I think this would be a similar experience.
Okay.
I just can't imagine it being any good. Who was it that started doing it once before and it was pathetic and they only had 3 parrot replies for everything?
That was Telstra.
That was Telstra. Yeah. Oh, so, all right. So maybe they've learned and they might do it better this time, but I'd be surprised.
Lydia put a rocket in them.
Yeah, that's
from
right.
the US and basically said, guys, you've missed the point of social networking, Lyft, and they did.
Now they've only got 140 characters to get it wrong. Before they could talk in your ear and get it wrong.
Dear. That reminds me of another, just another by the way, I'm finally changing to ADSL 2 Plus because the exchange which I'm on was basically one of those that Telstra got wrapped across the knuckles from not letting competition in.
Sorry,
them.
Sir, we're full.
That's the one. Right. That's the one.
Yeah.
Having been in that particular exchange because I know people and had a look around and gone, wow, there's a lot of space in here, isn't there? Anyway, to cut a long story short, finally done the rang Telstra during the course of the week to get another telephone line connected at home. And this telephone line, I didn't let them know at the time, was just a temporary line because they charge you more if you tell them it's a temporary line. And so anyway, we're changing to a new ISP, voice over IP, absolutely everything, and the big switch is going to be flung once the new service is up and running and all that sort of stuff. But the moral of the story is she did try and sell me everything Big Pond. Oh, my goodness.
They try really hard to do that, don't they?
Absolutely, and they don't listen to you. Mm. I sort of said, it's not a price-related issue, it's a quality of service-related issue. Oh, but have you checked our prices?
There's an easy way to stop that because they do that to me all the time. And they say, do you have your internet with it in Telstra? And I say, no, because I want real internet and your internet sucks. And they stop asking me after that.
Really? I had to draw parallels.
No, I'll just say straight out, if your internet wasn't so pathetic, maybe I'd think about it.
I had to draw parallels with a customer in our building who they're with the Big T and we were with a different provider. And I sort of said, listen, we're the same distance from the same exchange. You guys get 10 megabits per second on your ADSL 2. We get 21. Go figure. Why would I go and pay more for less? Mm. It just doesn't work. So, having said that, that's a very generalisation. That's our situation. It may not apply to others. You might find that you might be the only person on Telstra DSLAM where you are, and it might fly. But, you know, that's the thing. The more people on them, the slower they go. So, yeah, that was my news for the week. It's all happening technologically. Computers, excellent. Internet, the works. I'm quite looking forward to going VoIP at home. Did you know
don't switch off your PSTN straight away.
No, well, that's why I've got a separate number.
I don't think VoIP is reliable enough for a home phone myself.
Yeah, well, we don't use our home phone, so it doesn't need to be reliable.
Well, mine only, I know who's ringing. It's either my mum or my wife's mum. No one else ever rings it.
Well, see, and that's exactly...
It's not because we've got no friends.
And why haven't you connected your VoIP yet?
No, I use VoIP. I use VoIP for work, and it's pretty reliable.
Yeah, but why haven't you disconnected? Because that's my wife's phone, too.
It's WAF.
Yeah, it is.
It's WAF. It's not... The PSTN, the VoIP line is not quite reliable enough. What if I'm doing something... I know that I might be downloading something in the background or doing an upload. I know that maybe it's working, maybe it's not. The lady of the house wants the phone to just work. She doesn't want to hear, oh, yeah, sorry, you were trying to talk to your mum and it wasn't working, I was doing something. It's like, it's a phone, it should just work. She's a very understanding lady, I'm not having a go at her, but she's entitled to have a home phone that just works. That's why we've still got the PSTN.
When you say the WAF, you're talking about the WAF acceptability factor.
Yeah. Mm.
It's interesting you should say that. At work, I use VoIP religiously and I give our ADSL 2 connection, which is not through, it's through another provider, absolute plenty, and the voice is just fine. Both up and down.
I'm also a long way from the exchange.
Well, that might have something to do with it. That might. We're probably about 2 kilometres. And we get good bandwidth and stuff like that.
4 or so.
Oh, well, that's pushing the French. Yeah. Pushing the French a bit on ADSL 2.
Especially ADSL 2 because it's got a very sharp tail off. It falls away very quickly.
Yeah.
I actually got faster speeds on ADSL 1 than I did on ADSL 2. But my upload is a lot faster on ADSL 2 and I've decided it's worth the hit on the download to get the faster uploads.
Okay. Okay. Obviously, you need to push stuff away at a great speed.
Your ISP might be that they have different strategies they use to sync the line. They might be able to optimize that a little bit for you as well. It might be worth having a chat with them about it.
Yeah, I might do that.
Yeah, go for NXM. Signal to noise ratio falls off. You get a few retries, but by goodness, it's fast.
Oh, I'll play around with it.
Especially if you can, like, I know Internode in particular.
Well, that's
you can
who
actually,
I'm with, and I know they'll.
You can jump in and
they'll fiddle with the settings.
And you can do it too. You can jump in and log in and play with your NXM settings. And just play with your and check your signal to noise and do
but
that.
But see, that's why you don't want your home phone and VoIP because if the missus is trying to make a call, you can't say, "Oh, I was just tweaking the settings."
I don't care. But I've trained my missus; she does everything on the mobile, and I've got the bill to prove it.
No, but see, that's the thing is we don't have the cap mobile plan anything, so we're not big mobile users. If we were, I'd just say, "Yeah, use your mobile for everything."
That's
and we might be now because here's big news, which probably isn't on the rundown.
Off you go then.
Vodafone is upgrading their GPRS network to Edge.
We did that last week, but that's all right. We've got this one here too. Vodafone completes the 3G network expression.
No, but did you talk about Edge or did you just
talk about 3G? Yeah, we did talk about Edge.
All right, so we might move her iPhone 2G from Telstra's Edge network to Vodafone's Edge network, which means she'll get a lot more calls for a dollar.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. But you have to be
when you don't listen to the podcast, people.
You do have to be a bit tech savvy these days. So, and if you can make head nor tail out of what the telcos are doing, well, then that's all going to be good. But yeah, there's some other news tonight while we're talking about Vodafone. They're they have completed their 3G network expansion. So from today, customers will be able to access 3G services in hundreds of rural areas around Australia after the company completed the delayed network upgrades. The expansion, which cost around $500 million, you want to put it into round numbers, $500 million, that's a lot of money to spend on a telephone network.
It certainly is.
Was first announced in December 07, was due to go live by the end of last year, but Vodafone blamed issues with its supplier, as we all do, for causing the delay. Can't get the bits, I guess. That's the same. Well, Mark went overseas. He works for that supplier.
Yeah.
He went over to roll out 4G in Boston.
Yeah, so maybe that's where the bits went.
That's exactly right. So it all went over there. They didn't hang around to do Vodafone or anything. So there you go. So that's some news for Vodafone. So if you're out in the country and you've now got Vodafone 3G access, well, it's going to be good if you've got an iPhone or
and
something
like that.
If you've
got an old phone and you suddenly see that instead of giving you the GPRS signal, it's giving you a little E symbol, it could mean you're on Edge, which means your speed should be a lot faster.
I still haven't worked out all the hieroglyphics that come up on my phone at times. It just gets bamboozling all the different shapes, colours and funny things that you get on the top of these things. So anyway. All right. another interesting story. LAMP coders celebrate deep space transmission. Now, this was I thought, what on earth is this? And even as we were discussing it before the show tonight, Adam's going, what on earth is that? Anyway, apparently there's a group of Sydney-based open source developers which built a website in under 40 hours that took 5.5 million hits in a little over a week. Now, the site that they built was used to register some 25,880 short messages, none more than 160 characters, that was transmitted by the joint NASA and CSIRO Deep Space Communications Complex at Tidbinbilla. And it was basically the Hello Earth campaign set up to celebrate National Science Week. So someone's sending texts a long way.
Yeah, I know what mine would be. All your bases are belong to us.
But I read that and I thought of, you know, Independence Day and some of those old, you know, B-grade movies of, you know, the whatever it was, the time code backwards to sound like spaceships coming across. Oh, it was very humorous, one of those movies. But, oh, look, I think that's a good idea. The popularity of the Hello Earth campaign took its organisers by surprise. Well, there you go. A lot of people want to phone home.
Everyone wants to spam aliens.
They do. The website received 5.5 million hits and 41,167 registrations, putting a small group of these Sydney guys through their paces. the team at Sydney-based IT services, eNerds, it's an appropriate business name, isn't it? We were asked on Wednesday, the 5th of August, just 4 days before the campaign was due, where they could host it and build it and do all that. So well done, eNerd. You've done proud. You've done us all proud.
So this planet looks like it's 10 light years away, which means it's going to be, assuming they, well, if there's a response, it would arrive around 2051. How can that be right? If it's going to take the message,
it's about
my math's
20.
Bad. Yeah, no. Still doesn't add up. They must be taking a while to think before they write back. If it's taken 20 years to get there,
and
shouldn't the reply
get back?
Then why does the reply get back in 2051 and not 2049? Maybe they're allowing 2 years to decode our messages.
Maybe it's not quite exactly.
Maybe
light years.
They're all scratching their head going, all their bases are belong to us?
Yeah, what exactly. Yeah. And they're going to have to get onto Wikipedia and look it all
look
up.
It up.
And, yeah.
And the lag is terrible.
That's right.
Ping times from there. Oof.
All right. In other news, Dell, that computer mob, is looking to Windows 7 for a recovery. Their chief executive, Michael Dell, has said that the market is starting to recover and the demand for IT equipment looks to be rising again. I would have thought saturation would have really kicked in with PCs, but I guess with Windows 7 coming along, everyone's been sitting on the fence.
Everybody's been holding off upgrading. It's been impossible to sell a computer in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Because, yep. And I've been the same. I've been holding off getting my new computer because I wanted to get one when I could put Windows 7 on it.
Because why get Vista and then go through the trouble of upgrading it and find
and have to pay money again?
Yeah, and find your drivers don't work.
Microsoft are not doing the upgrade offers.
I can't wait till after the couch because I've got so much to talk about what you just said then.
Okay.
Because I've done two. I've done a fresh and I've done an install.
Okay.
And they're worlds apart, let me tell you.
So, okay.
In the Dell's company's second quarter results, Dell said the profits have fallen by 23%. That was less than expected. So I guess that concurs with what you're saying, Graham, that everyone's been sitting tight and waiting to hopefully land a new PC as Windows 7's lobbed on their desktop.
If Windows 7 does hold up to its promises.
And see, that's the difference with Apple. No one will be holding out 6 months on buying a Mac because they're waiting for Snow Leopard.
No, because you wouldn't have to.
No, you might hold out for a week or two, but you wouldn't hold out for 6 months because, as you say, you wouldn't have to.
Yeah, what does a Snow Leopard upgrade cost?
Well, $39.
$39. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
But it's not just the money either.
Why can't we pay $39 to get from Vista to
Windows 7? You should have to pay for Windows 7. If you pay for Vista,
if you paid for Vista, you
should get it for $39 and then get a $38 rebate.
Yes. You're not getting any arguments from anybody there, and even on the chat, guys will probably agree.
I never
with
bought
you
a copy of Vista's.
Well, unfortunately, there's one application that actually works really well on Vista, I hate to say.
What's that?
It's one of the ones we use at work, which is the Avid Symphony, which is designed. It's been specifically written for Vista, and we ported it from an XP-based 32-bit system to a Vista-based 64-bit system, and it was light years difference. It was amazing.
But what you're talking about is really, really seriously high-end video editing software.
Absolutely.
That three people in Australia use.
No, it's a few more than that.
30?
A few more than that, too.
a relative handful.
Look, it's the software that feature films and stuff like that are cut on. It can handle all the nice, you know, 2K and 4K film resolutions and things like that.
Yeah, the mums and dads at home are not going to be using Avid.
No, but the point was, it's not about the Avid. It's about the fact that I found an application that works really well, custom written for that Vista X64 base.
Right.
So now I'm hanging out for it on Windows 7, which they've all said, yes, it supports, but no one's going to certify it until, obviously, it comes out. So
yeah, fair enough.
Bring on October 22. All right, in other interesting news, Twitter cross-site scripting flaw is still not fixed.
Again?
A potential critical cross-site vulnerability has not been fixed, according to researchers who discovered the problem. Search marketing professional James Sattler claimed that the vulnerability in the popular blogging site could allow hackers to insert malicious JavaScript code into tweets. Well, isn't this where it's all going, isn't it? Everything's becoming malicious. One of the things I did when I loaded up my Windows 7 box is I put up my virus stuff on it and I built it up nice, clean, fresh install. And I thought, well, while I'm here, I'm going to go out and find a malware site and just see what happens so that if I needed to, I could blow it away and start again.
Okay.
And I did that. I found a malware site. You just put something popular in, look for the .cn variable that just sort of pops up underneath in the Google search.
Yep.
So I did that. I typed in get Firefox because I wanted to get Firefox. And I thought, there's got to be a... And sure enough, about the third one down, get Firefox.cn. Anyway, clicked on the link, bang, up came all the warnings, and Kaspersky went off its face, and
Google warned you as well, doesn't it? Google says clicking on this link may damage your computer. Yeah,
Google didn't in this case.
Oh, really?
Warn me on that. But Kaspersky came up, Windows went ballistic and said, no, don't go to this site.
Okay.
But, so anyway, it was good. I moved away, unharmed, went back to the other site, and I thought, well, that's good. The protection in this software, combination of the antivirus stuff and the operating system did the trick, so... Very happy about that. So, watch out for Twitter. You might get a bit of nasty Java that'll take you to a malware site. So make sure you're all, service-packed and virused up.
Yes. The way to protect is to do your Windows updates, make sure they're all up to date, and have a good quality antivirus software installed on your machine, such as Kaspersky.
Very good. Now, what do you think of this, boys? Nokia unveils its first Linux phone.
That really surprises me.
Does it?
Yeah, because they're really throwing their weight behind Symbian.
Mm.
They went and bought the whole thing out and open sourced it just to make sure that they could protect it, because that is their big thing. That's the way they differentiate themselves from Android phones, from Windows Mobile phones, from iPhones. So for Nokia to do that seems a bit strange.
It also didn't ring true to me because of what Microsoft are doing with them at the moment too, trying to get all this new, you know, Silverlight and development platforms onto Nokia phones. So, yeah, they're obviously trying to forge partnerships in some certain organisations, but what are they trying to achieve with it? It's obviously trying to have a finger in a lot of pies, I guess.
Nokia with Symbian are one of the few that can actually hold their heads up against the likes of Android and Windows Mobile and iPhone. So I'm not sure where they would. If you were some little player, I won't pick on anybody, but you know, anybody but the people I just named, basically.
Yep.
I can see why you'd want to do that, but you'd think Nokia would be standing firm on that.
It's interesting.
They've obviously got a plan.
Yeah, yeah. Linux is obviously the free operating system choice out there for most people.
But this is on a phone though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nokia don't have to pay for Symbian. A, they own it. B, it's open source.
Yeah, but what's... Yeah, well, no, that's very true, which is exactly what Linux is. It's open source.
And Symbian's already a very mature operating system. It's got a lot of stuff developed for it. They've got the Ovi thing, which I haven't used it yet.
They've got a shop now.
It's the Ovi shop sort of services, whatever. So if they're putting all the resources into that, why then entertain Linux at the same time? Is it actually Android they're talking about?
No, it's just saying the Finnish firm has been looking for business opportunities from offering services like music downloads or games to cell phone users as the handset market itself is maturing. So maybe they're just looking for an edge, but its offerings have gained limited traction. So maybe the Ovi store that you speak of has just
but
why bother?
See, Nokia's bringing out their own netbook as well, which is interesting. I'll be interested to see what they do with that. And this is something I'm going to talk about.
Build a phone into it is what they'll do with that.
I'm going to talk about next week. But I'd be interested to see what they do with that and how they market it, because you really wouldn't want to put it in Harvey Norman next to the discount Aces and Asuses and everything, because you're just going to get into a discount war.
Well, maybe that's just it. Nokia are in a discount war. Maybe they are losing market share because of the likes of iPhones and other devices like that.
They are huge, though. Nokia is big.
Well, yeah, they are big, but according to reports that they are losing market share. Their selling prices have declined faster than the industry average. So maybe they're panicking. Maybe it's time to speculate. Maybe someone's getting hot feet or something. I don't know. Anyway, watch this space, I guess. See what happens with Linux on a mobile phone. Dr. Ron's still not happy with his cupcake, by the way. The cupcake just didn't quite live up to what it was supposed to be. So, in other interesting news, Mozilla polls users on Firefox 3 uninstalls. Now, Graham, we spoke about this last week too, that Firefox was a little bit heavy.
Yeah, I think people are starting to... The Firefox, honeymoon is over. Yeah.
The bloat. Bit of bloat in there. And that's Chrome is a good example of people going, oh, wow, that runs pretty fast, actually.
Yeah.
And yes, really well.
Don't have all my plugins, but I can live without those. I just want a web browser.
Does it have an ad blocker?
No.
I haven't seen. That's the problem with... I know. Yeah, off you go.
No, this is just with my son. He plays, you know, Flash games on the computer and stuff like that. I found Space Invaders that was a Flash game, right? And I'd played it on my phone, and my wife, I think, had played it on her phone. I put it for him on a Windows 7 machine that I'd set up and on Firefox, but I hadn't installed Adblock Plus. And so the ads come up around it for very interesting young ladies who want to get to know you.
Mm.
And I'm like, dude, where'd that come from? And he's like, Dad, I want to play the game. I was like, hang on, I just got to fix something. Install Adblock Plus. Now you can play.
Yes.
Mm. So that is one of the reasons, especially for children, that the ads you get on websites are terrible.
Yeah, and we did say that last week, that if you want a heavy browser with lots of features, lots of add-ons, you can put in all these extra things like your ad blocker, like your... you had a bookmark FCP, synchronizer thing.
I love all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Xmarks, Foxmarks.
So if you want that, all those extras, then yeah, Firefox is possibly still the way to go.
You know how Dr. Ron had problems with his Android phone and loading some of the Google products, such as the location software and all that sort of stuff. Well, Chrome is not
It's not out there by a long shot. You can't load the Google search bar. You know the Google search bar that you get on Firefox?
You don't need it. It's built into it.
Well, it's just one of the things you can't load.
But why would you need it?
I don't know why you'd need it.
It's built into it.
Does it? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Can you change browser or do you have to use the Google one?
That's like saying you can't add a Ford badge to a Ford.
Yeah, I've already got one. Why would you want to use another browser?
All right. Maybe we're missing something there. We'll take that up with him later.
I just thought you can't install something. Anyway, don't worry about it. Okay, moving right along. The video game market's becoming increasingly competitive in Australia at the moment, with obviously the Xbox is now $100 cheaper in Australia. PlayStation in a price war? What do you reckon? Absolutely.
Yeah, they've stripped it down a bit more. They've ripped a few things out. You can't run Linux on the new one, which is interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it's really three game consoles that are worth their weight these days, which is the Wii, the PlayStation, and the Xbox. And obviously with Christmas coming up, which one are you going to choose? If you're a frustrated parent who has to go and buy one and knows nothing about these games, where would you go? What would you do?
I was actually talking to a guy about this the other day, and he was tossing up between which one to buy. And he got the Wii because, like me, he's got young kids. And he reckons that the Wii games are a bit more young kid friendly and easier to play and a bit more interactive. And I think to a certain degree he's right. The PlayStation 3 games are aimed more at an older audience. If you're looking for a games console for your under 5s or even your under 10s, maybe the Wii's got more to offer.
Okay, so if you're buying a console for your kids, you buy a Wii. If you're buying a console for yourself, you get a PlayStation
3.
There you go. Yeah.
So where does the Xbox fit into all this? You don't.
You buy that if you work for Microsoft.
You buy that for someone you don't like.
Now, the Wii's the one with the things you wave around in the air.
Yeah. Make sure the others are starting to copy that sort
make
of thing.
Make sure you strap your wrist things on because you don't want it going through your plasma or your LCD.
I know a little boy, not my little boy, thankfully, who busted his grandfather's television the other day.
Oh, no.
Hi, if you're listening. So my son has now been warned. I didn't tell him who because it's someone that he knows. Just said, I know a little boy who broke a television, so you be bloody careful when you're using those things. Just put the hand straps on.
Just check your insurance policy and make sure the television's nominated for accidental damage if you go buy one of those things, especially around Christmas time because accidents do happen. So, anyway, there you go. Video pricing is going to be, or the game console pricing is going to be competitive leading up to Christmas.
Games are still expensive, though.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah. Oh, we've got DSs for our little kids, and boy, you've got to buy two if you want to play together. Have you noticed the way they do that?
Doesn't surprise me.
So, you're up for $120 for a new game, and the thing is that if you're like me, you're not interested in playing a game where you've got to chase cats or little pets around and do stuff like that. So I have no idea what we're buying.
Yeah.
And you're going to go and invest $120 in something that, gosh, I hope the kids like this. So, yeah, I think you can't go wrong with the known games like the Marios and stuff like that.
Read a few reviews and stuff like that as well.
I guess that all comes to it, really, doesn't it? Facebook tightening its privacy policies and things like that. This is after they've been through the ringer recently with problems with their security and the likes. Well, they're actually going to tighten it a little bit more. And for third-party game developers and all those funny little apps, I mentioned this in the news.
Yeah.
They're now having to, if you're a developer for these sites where you want to play one of these funny little plug-in games that you find on Facebook. I'm not a Facebook user, so if it sounds like it, I'm not. But you can play things in these social networking sites.
Mm.
And rather than getting all your personal details, because that's what they used to do. They used to say, Graham, if you want to play this game, you've got to click
hand over
you. Now they're becoming selective, and the game developers now have to say, well, we want the location and we want the name and the gender or whatever it is like that in an attempt to actually try and minimize some of this identity theft that's obviously floating around out there. And when you choose to close your account, they're going to tell you what happened. They haven't told us yet, but they're apparently going to tell us what happens to all that data. Yeah. Do they delete it? Obviously not, if they're going to wait and tell us down the track.
I use Facebook, but I never use anything that requires me to install something. If someone sends a link and I think it looks interesting, and then it says such and such wants to access your account, no, not interested.
So you'll end up with a very plain, unadorned Facebook page.
Oh, compared to some of the rubbish I see from some people, I'm happy with that.
Yep.
Oh.
Facebook's got 250 million users. Is it going to last much longer? Is it going to be one of those entrenched social networking sites that we're going to still be around in 5 or 10 years'
time? Bigger user base, it's going to be around for a long time. I mean, some people say it's already jumped the shark, but you can jump the shark and still be popular.
Mm.
Still be mainstream. Well, mainstream. Mm. Some people's definition of jump the shark is mainstream. You know, so
because you got to look at the owner. You know, Rupert bought it under the pretense back in the good old days that we can make money out of this because everyone's going to it. And as soon as you put an ad on, they all disappeared.
So, you know, you can't put advertising on social networking sites. People don't use it. So how are they going to make money from it?
The interesting thing is to notice what Google have been doing recently with their, what's it called, iGoogle or whatever it is.
What have they been doing?
Well, they've been adding social networking type features to that. So on your...
The iTalk or whatever it is.
Not just that, but a whole lot of other things. A lot of the new gadgets to go on your iGoogle page have social networking features in them, like the Facebook applications. They're very, very similar in a way to the Facebook applications. They talk to your friends. They know who your friends are. They allow you to play games with other people that are on your friends list and all that sort of stuff. It's very, very Facebook-ish.
I thought Murdoch owned MySpace.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He does, actually.
You're making me nervous. I was actually Googling it, thinking I don't want to make a fool of myself.
No, you made a fool out of me. That's right. Yeah,
because
he does.
Murdoch always disses Facebook. He says it's rubbish because he owns MySpace.
Exactly. Yeah. Who owns Facebook then? We don't know.
I don't think. See, this is where you go to Wikipedia. Yeah. It's a race between me and Graham so you can type faster.
All right.
I don't think it's owned by one big player like that.
All right. Well, it will be interesting to see how long it hangs around for. But, yeah, MySpace was one that was definitely getting
privately
all sorts of
owned by Facebook Incorporated. It's probably got some big-name investors. Mm. But, yeah, not controlled by a big media player like MySpace is.
All right, we're going to take a break. As we go to the break, just a couple of comments on the chat. Some of the guys have heard that unconfirmed rumours that the new Slimline PS3 overheats. And the Wii has also the number one most violent game. Well, there you go. So you get good with the bad there.
Mario Kart.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk all about the new cat, the new window, and all the pros and cons thereof. So this should be interesting.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This is
the one that occupies the room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an XE and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Android.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
So you unplugged all the fax machines?
Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is back up.
Backups, for goodness sake. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, that you are. Come along and have a chat to us on the chat. We're all there having a chat now.
Techtalkradio.com.au.
That's the one. We're going to talk all about operating systems because there's two new ones on the block. There's a new cat and there's a new window for things to do. So let's start off with Adam's view from the couch this week, and he's going to go Riverside down at one of the lovely parts of town and have a latte or three as he does, and talk about the new cat, the new operating system for the Mac machine, the $39 upgrade, $29 if you're in the US, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk all about the pros and cons of these new operating systems and just how they're faring. Okay, this week we've taken the view from the couch on the road again. I'm sitting here along the Yarra River, sitting here with my partner in crime on the Macworld podcast, Anthony Caruana. Anthony, you're a bit of a Mac guru. Today is Snow Leopard Day. Should we care?
Well, you should care because it's new and shiny and pretty.
It's got to put money in Steve Jobs' pocket.
Yeah, only a little bit though, $40.
Yeah. You know, well, that's amazing. Like $40. What's Vista got? What's Windows 7 going to cost?
Well, I think we're talking about something like three or four times that for most end users doing a straight upgrade on the most common version.
So how does that work? And is it that the only pricing, $40?
Yeah, well, it's sort of interesting because you say you're going to pay $40 for some software.
Yeah.
But in effect, you're paying $40, I think, to get at least 7 gigs of disk back.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go and buy a 8 gig memory stick, that's going to cost you at least $40.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you're getting 8 gigs of disk or 7 gigs of disk back at least.
So what do you mean 7 gigs of disk back? What's the benefits of Snow Leopard?
Well, Snow Leopard's installation actually uses up a stack less space than the Leopard one did before. So when you do even an in-place upgrade, you'll recover at least 7 gigs of disk space. In fact, some of the stuff I'm seeing now is people are coming back saying, I'm getting back as much as 14 gigs.
Yeah.
Mainly around things like, it doesn't install, when you install Leopard at the moment, it installs every printer driver that Apple knows.
Yeah.
every single one, so they're all local.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't. It does install on demand.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it does a bit of compression about some other bits and pieces, chucks away all the old PowerPC code that used to have to be in the operating system as
course,
well.
Yeah.
Because now this is an Intel-only upgrade, so anyone still running around with a G4 or G5.
So if you've got a PowerPC Mac, Leopard's as far as you're ever going to get.
Leopard's the end of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not that unreasonable.
Yeah, look, and that's a trend. The Intel transition started 5 years ago, yeah. 4 years ago. So as transitions go, 4 years is pretty reasonable.
And if you've got a 4 or 5 year old PowerPC Mac, it's time to look at upgrading the Intel. Yeah, the performance boost is impressive.
Yeah, true. That's true. Yeah. Although we've got a G5 iMac sits in the corner and it's the browsing machine and the email machine for the family. So there's still some utility, but you're just not going to get Snow Leopard on there.
Yeah. So people are saying Windows 7 is just a service pack for Vista. Is Snow Leopard just a service pack for Leopard?
Look, at one level it is. Snow Leopard is really... Snow is the original version of Leopard plus four things.
Yeah.
Plus Exchange, 64-bit processing, this thing called OpenCL, which is just all about using the processing power of your graphics card for other stuff, and the and Grand Central Dispatch, which is just about being able to use multiple cores on your computer, which most processors are now. They're multiple cores, which means you've got more than one CPU per computer now.
Yeah.
And it's just about using those things a little bit smarter.
So it's really just about optimizing what you've already got, getting more out of your resources.
Yeah.
So would it even invigorate, if you've got an old machine that's feeling a little bit sluggish, is it likely to get a bit of a pickup from Snow Leopard?
If it's one that's capable of doing 64-bit,
yeah.
then yeah, it will.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much most of the machines that are up to about 18 months old.
Yeah.
So you'll get some benefit there. But certainly, you're expecting to get a speed bump. Apple keep telling me that some stuff's going to run two times faster or twice as fast if they're going to speak English.
Yeah.
You know, if you get 8 gigs of disk or 7 gigs of disk back and your computer's twice as fast...
For 40 bucks.
For 40 bucks. You know, you can't buy 2 gigs of RAM for that.
Yeah,
so,
which we'd have to do to get a similar sort of result.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a bit more than a service pack.
Yeah.
And for the people in the corporate world, it's Exchange.
Yeah.
You know, that's the big thing if you're corporate.
Now, do you think that this is going to win an extra level of people across from Windows?
I don't know if this is a thing that's going to get the switches across the line. I think Tiger and Leopard were about trying to get switches.
Yeah.
You know, they were big feature-rich expansions. You know, we got Spotlight for system-wide search. You know, Ed Expose got refined. We had Spaces for multi-desktops. All that stuff were big new features that people wanted. If you're looking for features, you're not going to find a bunch of new features. In fact, when I spoke to Apple, they said that they had parked on refinement. They were parking the car now strictly on the refinement parking spot. They're about refinement. They're not about adding features.
You're going to have to explain that one to me. I obviously haven't had enough Kool-Aid today. They're parking the refining the what?
They're parking the development on refinement.
Yeah.
So they're not adding features anymore. They're saying, let's make what we've got better before we add anything else to it.
Which is kind of a Windows 7 sort of philosophy as well, isn't it?
I think so. I think really what they're doing is they're stopping the game and saying, let's not add any more stuff, because if you look at operating systems, Windows is the same as OS 10, effectively. You've had about 6 iterations of it.
Yeah.
And all you've done is you've been adding stories on top of your building one by one. And the thing is, you hadn't designed the foundation to be a 6-story building. You designed it as a 1-story building you kept adding to.
Yeah.
So now what you're going to do is say, right, let's stop. Hang on a sec. What we need to do is go back down and have a look at the foundations.
Yeah.
And if they're not right, well, let's start jacking them up and fixing them up as we go along.
Let's re-stump this puppy before we go any further.
That's right. And that's really what it's about.
All right. I reckon that covers it nicely. Thank you very much for joining me on the couch this week.
No, my pleasure.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Interesting concept there with the wonders of the new cat that has hit the market there. So, very interesting. Puts it all into perspective. So, yeah, if you didn't want all those printer drivers, well, you don't have to have them now. Just upgrade to cat. Anyway. Adam, what's your first? You've obviously installed it now.
I've installed it now. I went out on Friday. Apple sent me a message on Thursday or Friday and said, we're sending it to you by express post. You'll get it Monday. Yeah, okay. So then I was talking to Anthony Friday morning and I made a few phone calls and I realized that the retailer down the road, no, he was getting his, I think, Monday as well. But I realized that the reseller down the road was going to have it about lunchtime. And I thought, well, that's okay. What I'll do is I go out and I'll just pay the $39 for it. And that's all right. And what I can even do is then if I've got a friend who was going to go out and pay the $39, I can hand the other disc over to them. Everyone's got a disc. Everyone's happy. I got it on Friday instead of Monday. So I get my one on Friday. I take it home. I go to install it and nothing happens.
What do you mean nothing happens?
Well
you put disc in the drive and nothing happens.
I put the disc in and it wouldn't even recognize there was a disc in the machine. Okay, that's weird. All right, so I reboot it.
Try a different machine?
I've only got one Mac. Because I'm a recent convert, right?
Yeah.
So I've got my MacBook and that's it. So I rebooted the machine. I hold down C to boot from the disk. Fine, it boots up. Hi, I'm the Snow Leopard installation disk. How you doing? Fine, I want to install it here. Go. You know when they try to jump to hyperspace in the Millennium Falcon? That's what it did. And I'm like, this is not good. And so it kept giving me different errors about can't read this from the disk, can't read that from the disk. I booted back into Leopard. It could see the disk. It tried to tell me the disk was dirty. This sucker is straight out of the plastic. You know, it's cherry. It's not dirty. So after at least an hour, I decided, right, there's something wrong with the disk. So I did a little bit of searching. I found one other guy who I think was in Sydney who was having the same problem. And, of course, it hadn't really – people were only just waking up in the US, so it hadn't really become a big thing in the US. So I wrote a story about it for ITY and put it up about 6 o'clock Friday night and then kept trying things Friday night, kept like copying the disk to the hard drive. Nothing would work. This definitely a dud disk. And then just kept trickling in and the traffic to that story started building up as more and more people going.
So there was a problem out there, Houston.
So there's definitely a bad batch out there and it's definitely not just Australians who have been affected by it.
Wonder if it was, well, there you go. I was going to say, wonder if it was an Australian replicator, but obviously not.
Well, but maybe, like, I think the Asian ones, I think, come from Singapore. So maybe it was this particular region. I don't know. But there's definitely a bad batch out there. I rang and spoke to Apple on Friday night who said, yes, I personally have had one other person tell me that there was a problem with it. And I got the impression that he wouldn't admit it in so many words that other help desk staff had also dealt with them, but he wouldn't say it in that many words. He said, we've got no idea when we're going to have any replacements. So basically, if I didn't have that one coming today, I would have had nothing.
So obviously it didn't come from Singapore or wherever you love.
I don't know, but the thing is they're all sold out. He said, go back to your shop. So I rang the shop and they're like, dude, we're sold out. You know that. You had to book to get yours. and so I rang the shop on Saturday morning. He said, yeah, we've had someone else come back as well and say they've got a dud. And there's just enough of it going around. There might only be 1 in 1,000 or whatever, but it's enough.
So
it's starting to show up.
Don't Apple have a download facility where you can, if you're that way? No?
So he's shaking his head, no? You can download it. You can download it, but not from Apple.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you ask me, you're insane to download an operating system because God only knows what someone's put in it.
Well, both Graham and I downloaded our versions of Windows 7 off the Microsoft.
But I'm saying Apple don't do that. No. But you can download Windows 7 off BitTorrent.
You can, but why would you?
God knows how many surprises are in there.
It's a brand new thing for Microsoft too to be doing it with their partners and with the Action Pack. It's a brand new thing of having the downloads available.
Absolutely.
It's not something they've been doing for a long time.
And it's a damn fine thing too.
It's cool. It is, yeah.
It means we just logged in last weekend. I think I even did it whilst we were on air last week.
Yes.
And downloaded 3 gigabytes of material whilst we were on air. Now, yep.
And I downloaded it the night before they said it was going to be available to us.
Exactly. So we're going to probably to and fro between the two operating systems here, but we'll persevere with us a bit.
Interesting that they've both come about at around the same time, isn't it?
It is. I was talking to one of the guys, one of my suppliers today. We were talking about the Mac and the Cat range, and they're really out of Cat titles now. And we were joking in the office, what are they going to call the next release?
Moggy.
Snow Leopard 2.
Well, actually, the consensus in our office was Roadkill. So
I read somewhere that they were going to find a... The next one was going to be an old operating system that only runs on new computers, and they were going to call it Cougar.
Wasn't there a thing about Cougar? They weren't
very funny.
Get 5 Cougars.
I think that just went straight over Andrew's head.
I think it did.
Warlock is probably laughing.
Yeah. So, but yes, what are we going to talk about? Exchange support is now a big new thing in the new Cat,
and they're bragging that they're the only operating system that has built-in Exchange support. Because with Microsoft, it doesn't come out of the box. You've got to buy something.
That's right, yeah.
So what else are they talking about? Better stacks, dockable stacks viewed as grids now have scroll over bar.
I don't know what any of that means.
Now, basically, what they're doing is they're playing catch up with Windows 7. Did I just talk about this in the view from the couch?
Oh, sorry.
I can't remember.
The Windows 7, the taskbar in Windows 7 and what you can do with the pop-up windows and stuff like that is really good and is ahead of what Apple does. And that's one of the things that annoys me about using a Mac is the dock is just not as user-friendly and doesn't make it as easy to find windows and stuff as using Windows. And particularly Windows 7 has even taken to the next level. And I seriously think someone has sat down in Cupertino and said, guys, we dropped the ball here. We need to catch up with Windows in this particular regard.
A lot of people preferred the Apple dock compared to the old Windows Touch Bar.
Yeah.
But I think Windows 7, they've just leapfrogged it a bit, have they? Beautiful. They've just gone a bit...
Yeah. And it brings up the previews, which come in top of each other as you scroll across. It's so easy to find what you're
previews.
Looking for.
Full screen previews, yeah, absolutely.
That
yeah.
is very nice, isn't it?
And I've even Windows seen 7. It run on a netbook.
The downside is, though, it is an extra click to get to a lot of the things you want.
I haven't noticed yet. Really?
Yeah. Because if you've
not compared to the dock which on Leopard, which won't even show you a preview of a
window. No,
compared to the old taskbar, yeah.
Where you'd have your four Word documents side by side,
yeah.
Whereas now you click on Word, and then it pops up the four Word documents you've got open, and then you select them from the four, so, yeah.
The thing with Windows 7 at the moment, too, you've got to be careful how long you left click for. Strange things start happening. Have you noticed that when you
No, I haven't noticed that.
Okay, maybe it's just us when we've been, because I've done a new thing on my fresh install. I did two installs of Windows 7. One was an upgrade on my little laptop that I've got here. I did an upgrade from Vista Ultimate to Windows 7 Ultimate. And can I just say how painful that was? That took me, basically insert the CD with the OS on it, and 2.5 hours later, I think I'd done an upgrade to, a successful upgrade to Windows 7.
Well, the same thing going from Leopard to Snow Leopard. I haven't done the upgrade, but apparently it's about 40 minutes or so.
Yeah. The other side of the coin...
I was about to say, the clean install of Windows 7 was fast.
Absolutely.
You're out and browsing the web and installing your favourite apps within the hour.
Absolutely. What I did on the weekend, I popped down to my favourite computer shop and I bought myself a new SSD. Drive, a 64 gig SSD drive.
Yep. Well, that's a solid state hard drive. It's a hard drive, but it's built like a memory stick is.
It hasn't got physical
no
moving disk parts.
In it. That's just no got moving, memory in it. Yeah,
correct. Is that for the HP you've got sitting here?
No. That's for my PC at home. My home PC. Because what I decided to do at home was to run dual systems. So what I did was I bought the SSD, which I thought I'll load Windows 7 up onto that, and I'll just F8, because when you boot the PC, you can F8 and choose whichever drive you want to boot off. And so I F8 to boot, which by default it goes to Windows 7, and
that's option for you Mac users.
Yeah. So anyway, what happened was I did the same installation on just a standalone. It was a Zeus motherboard with dual processor, one of the Intel chips in it. Anyway, I measure my installs by the number of cups of coffee I tend to have through it. And the install for Windows 7, fresh, brand new, onto a new drive, was one cup of coffee, which equates to around about 20 to 25 minutes, I'm guessing, from putting the CD in and powering up the device to actually logging in for the first time.
Yeah.
Now, that was absolutely amazing. Now, with the SSD drive, what I did was obviously just install the operating system on that. And what I did the first time I booted up onto, as in cold power on to come up into the operating system, the boot time was 20 seconds.
Ooh, that's Chuck Yeager time, that. That's breaking the sound barrier.
At that point in time, I went and told my wife, and she said, "That's nice, dear." So I had to ring Graham and tell him.
That's right. I got this very excited phone call from Andrew because he had to tell someone who would understand.
Yeah. I said I had to ring someone who could sort of feel the force there.
Have you done, someone's asking in the chat, have you done the performance score thing to see?
Yes, I have. I've got a score of 7.1.
They guessed 7 here, Marky Mark.
Yeah.
7.1, that's
it goes
sweet.
Up to 7.9 on the Richter scale, on the Microsoft scale.
Yeah.
And that was fresh out of the box. I should actually take some screen grabs of it and publish it online. That was, having said a 20-second boot up, what I then did was I connected it to my Windows 2008 server and put on my Kaspersky antivirus program, and it slowed the boot down. I was disappointed. It now boots in 30 seconds as opposed to 20 seconds. I was very disappointed in that. But comparing that to my old Windows XP boot time, which was around about a cup of coffee or put the kettle on stage anyway, which is about 4 minutes by the time it whirred and clunked and loaded up all the rubbish that I had on my traditional hard drive, I'm very happy. Very happy, Jan. Mm. And also what I'm doing now is a lot of my applications that I use frequently, such as some of the Office applications, some of the Photoshop applications, Photoshop loads in 2 seconds. from clicking Photoshop in the taskbar, it goes blue screen, not the death one, yeah, but the blue,
good blue screen.
The little blue screen that you see in Photoshop. And then by the time that's drawn, the background's come up and it's sitting there waiting. Yeah. I've gone, oh, this is good. So my next challenge, which is a very big challenge for if anyone's migrated to Vista, you'll know all about the font issues. We're moving away from TrueType font. So if you've spent lots of money on TrueType, you're probably not going to want to migrate because the TrueTypes don't show up on Windows. Well, not that I found. And you've had to go to these new OTR type sort of.
But will they fix that? Is that a bug or a
feature? I don't know. But there's a lot of things about it in articles and a lot of Vista users, because I noticed even one of the Vista 64-bit machines wouldn't even load up some of the old TrueType fonts. So it's pre Windows 7 is what I'd say to you. So that was my experience. And also,
with your SSD drive, I think that's the thing, because on my computer, with that performance score, the hard disk on mine is the lowest of the scores. So
it's holding everything else back.
It's holding the rest of it back, yeah.
Yeah, because that's where it gives you your low score, isn't it? It chooses the lowest one,
it's the hard disk. So, putting in an SSD drive will probably get my score. Well, it'd get my score up to from 5.9 to 6.6, because the next lowest thing is the graphics card.
Yeah. Now, I've also
That's because you're on a notebook.
No, that's not a no. That's I'm IDPing my machine at home.
Oh, excuse
that's
me.
On my notebook. that's my machine at home. I'm looking at there.
Sorry. That's what we do.
I'm confusing Adam.
I forgot who I was in the presence of. We're not worthy, dude.
Sorry. If it was my notebook, the taskbar would be at the bottom.
I was thinking 5.9 was pretty damn good for a notebook.
There you go. So.
I'll have to check mine and see what it is on the laptop. Anyway, one of the other things which both operating systems are allegedly talking up is the level of security. Apparently, Snow Leopard has lifted the game a little bit for the Mac people, which I'm not 100% sure
checking
about.
Checking for 2 bits of malware.
Oh, is that really?
That's what I read. 2 bits of malware. I'm not sure. I can't confirm that, but...
That's good. I was telling Graham off air before, one of the tests that I decided to do before I loaded my machine up too much with all my prized possessions and software and started actually making it something I really wanted, I thought, having loaded up my antivirus program and the Windows operating system itself, I'd go and find some malware sites to just throw at this new install to see how well it defended.
How protected it was.
Exactly,
yeah.
To see what the response was and all that sort of stuff. And anyway, I went off, and if you just go and Google Get Firefox or something like that, you'll notice that underneath most of the sites that you want, you'll find the .cn or the Chinese-based sites. And let me tell you the amount of malware that appears on .cn networks. I certainly found one in Get Firefox. So don't ever go to getfirefox.org.cn or something bizarre like that, which I went to. And let me tell you how quickly the machine just made all sorts of squealing noises and jumped out at me and said, don't go here. Don't even think about it. So, but in credit to the combination of the operating system and the antivirus software, we went there, it made lots of noises, and we went away, and for none the wiser. So it was a good malware experience.
Didn't get any malware on your machine, despite going to the site.
Full check and a full rescan of the operating system on the new drive, which was pretty new, and not a cracker. So I'm very happy about that. So that was a good test. But anyway, obviously the Snow Leopard is...
not what I'd recommend most people do.
No, I wouldn't recommend doing it. But I just wanted to try it just on the odd chance to see. Because while you've got a fresh install, you can always blow it away and start again if you needed to.
I took that same approach, but for a different reason. I tried out all the different available drivers and little bits of third-party software and so on to put on the machine. I did a test install, tried all these things out, worked out which combination of drivers worked best, then blew it away and just loaded the ones I wanted at the end.
Okay. Someone started a wiki on all the things that do and don't work with Snow Leopard.
Oh, yeah.
Which is getting a lot of
traffic.
Are
there more do's than don'ts or more don'ts than do's?
I think there's more do's than don'ts. But like I said, I've only been running it for 2 hours. Thank you very much, Dud Disk. So all I basically managed to do is install it and do a couple of tests
So we've got to keep an eye on some of your blogs and
Now that I've got it up and running, in the next couple of weeks, I'll start writing about it.
Absolutely. All right, just jumping back to Snow Leopard, here's some of the new features or some more of the new features. The Doc Expose, click hold a Doc app icon and its open window shows in Expose. What's Expose?
Expose is basically you get it to move all... Well, say you've got five windows stacked up on top of each other. It spreads them all out so you can see all five of them and then you can click on the one that you want.
Okay.
The thing is, up until now, it's been a bit of a dog's breakfast, especially if you've got more than six or seven because they're different sizes. They're all over the place. I think what they're doing now is bringing a bit more order to Expose. So when you activate it, it gives you the windows in a grid or some more orderly fashion, so it's easier to find what you're looking for.
Okay. So, all right. So, there's a new dock for Expose.
Now, just to interrupt you while you're talking about Expose, I think the equivalent feature in Windows 7 is if you grab a window by the
short and curly.
by the title bar at the top, and just shake it from side to side, all the other windows that are on the screen minimize.
What? Yeah, it's in the same ballpark. Yeah, I've seen that feature.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
What do you do? You just click and hold on the title bar at the top of a window,
yeah.
Shake it from side to side a couple of times, and all the other windows will minimize.
Well, I'll have to try. I don't have a mouse on this machine. I think it would be a bit hard to do on a little pad.
It is a bit tricky to do on a pad, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's interesting. I will try that. Minimize window options to take advantage of the dock expose and not clutter the dock with minimized windows. You can set minimized windows into an application icon in the dock system preferences pane. Well, if that...
Oh, so you click one thing and it minimizes everything.
I
wonder where they nicked that idea from.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, people.
Yeah, there's a little icon that I think is default on a lot of Windows. Yeah, show desktop, I think they call it. Malware protection. It's early days, but Snow Leopard contains basic malware protection for those two things that Adam was talking about earlier.
Basic is the word you're looking for.
To stop you killing your Mac to death. Okay. Revamped Eject Manager. Now, this was the humorous thing
when they're
that...
desperate.
This was what I think was doing the rounds of the mainstream media the other day, and we've all gone, you're kidding. Is that what Leopard is? But apparently, no.
I couldn't eject the Snow Leopard installation.
Well, there you go.
It's
only working.
But if only I'd had Snow Leopard installed, I might have been able to eject it.
Oh, dear. In Leopard, disks often could be ejected because a file was in use by an application. Snow Leopard indicates which app is causing the problem.
That would be handy.
Okay. Number 7, improved keyboard shortcut management. Oh, this is good. This doesn't mean you can do control or option Apple or something like that and it lobs an application. Keyboard shortcuts now live in a revised keyboard system preference pane listed by category for easy editing.
Oh, but you could already edit the keyboard shortcuts. Obviously just made it easier to find or something.
They've just refined it a little bit. Mm. Revised services. The service menu is now context sensitive, showing only relevant options on a per app basis. Services can also be toggled via the service section of the keyboard shortcuts preferences. Is this like the service, what we call services in PC? Does this show you what is running on your Macintosh based on applications? Is that what
I
that
I don't think so, but we're maybe getting a little bit
more
further
like
under the
manager.
Bonnet. Hang on, I've got a Mac in front of me. No, I'm not even going to attempt. Here we go. Services is, I think, scripts and stuff that it can run in the background, like a way to automate things. So you've got the services there, and it's got like the disk utility and the finder and a script editor. So it's sort of like it's an easy way of tapping into the underlying power and saying, right, I need you to do this complicated macro of processes. Okay. But I could be absolutely completely wrong. I've never have to play with it.
All right. Something else in the new cat is smart text selection. Preview now selects text intelligently in multi-column documents rather than selecting across the entire page width.
Yeah, that'd be handy.
That's been in Word for a long time.
Yeah.
Well done, Mac.
There's a bit of catch-up going on.
Yeah. Text replacement, which is obviously something really good. That's a bit like cut and paste on the iPhone, I'm guessing. One of the future once apps supported it, but Mac OS X now has system-wide user-definable text substitution. That's handy,
I'm not sure. I read that. Does that actually mean that it would change a word in every document on your hard drive? You can put in Adam and change it to Andrew, and it would search every document on your hard drive. Because that sounds more dangerous than useful to me.
Yeah, that does sound exceptionally dangerous. Maybe it's just used in a particular document or something.
It's for like typing shortcuts. So you like type Adam Sieg and it puts in your full signature puts it in whatever document you happen to be using.
Could be.
All right, other features, better accessibility when enhanced voiceover. When enhanced voiceover utility showcases major improvements to assisting technologies within Mac OS X.
Speaking to you, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yes. Like the alt tags come to life in certain things. Well, it does that in the operating system now. Recording and trimming in QuickTime. Oh, that's handy. QuickTime. Yeah, good.
Well, I think they've added some of the features that you previously had to pay for QuickTime Pro to get.
Okay. Here's the feature that I reckon is just sensational. About time you did this, Mac. The date and time is now available in the menu bar. I think that's a doozy. So that's good on you. The clock tab within the date and time system preferences pane finally offers a show date option. So there you go. You can see that on your desktop as well.
Oh, because you've only got, like, mine's Monday 9:22 p.m., but, yeah, I can't actually set it to show me August 31.
Yep.
Yeah, that is annoying, actually, now you mention it.
Sorry about that.
I have played with that before to try and get it to show it.
Well, now you can.
And from the Windows side of the table, that's one of the things that's also improved in Windows 7 is that little clock application is now a lot more powerful. In Windows XP, a lot of us used to click on the clock and go into the change time dialog just to get a calendar to display.
Mm.
And you'd risk actually accidentally changing the date to the wrong date. Whereas now it's built in, so it actually shows you a calendar. It'll even show you multiple time zone clocks if you want to.
Well, it's handy if you travel or you have business colleagues that live in other far.
Or if you just communicate with people in different time zones, yeah.
Well, see, I'm in Leopard now, and if I click on the time and date... Well, I click on the time, it shows me the date, and then it asks me if I want to view it in analog or digital and says, do you want to open the time and date preferences? But maybe in Snow Leopard, as you say, it would be more useful if I clicked on that and it actually showed me the 30-day calendar and maybe lit up a few things that I was doing right now, as you say, the time in Tokyo or something like that. There's a lot more things they could do with that. So when I get back into Snow Leopard, I'll have a look at that.
One of the other things they're talking about is time zone tracking. So as you traverse the planet, your Mac will automatically update as you move around the world.
Okay.
Very handy. It's a bit like your mobile phone. So I wonder how it handles daylight saving in many parts of the world, because I know there's all these patches come out for Windows when the appropriate time
comes. I think Apple stuff just does daylight savings. I don't think it's an issue in the Apple world.
iCal Events Inspector. Edit an event, and you can tear it off a dialog as a separate inspector. Alternatively, set this as the default via the advanced preferences. So there you go. I'm not sure what iCal does, but obviously...
iCal's the built-in calendar in Mac OS X.
Oh, yeah, so you can stick it on your desktop, rip it out and stick it on.
Well, yeah, I guess that's what you meant. You can drag and drop it onto the desktop as an item, I suppose. I don't know.
Okay. It's also got automatic print.
Can you do that now? I'm just going to check it while you talk.
Okay, we've also got automatic printer driver updates. So as a result, instead of loading up every printer driver known to mankind, you now go and get the ones that you need, and it does it automatically. Another feature, and we're nearly done, faster wake up and shut down, which hopefully means that things come to life and go to sleep a little faster. And a smaller footprint is also part of the gig. So there you go. There's just a little bit about the new Mac.
The smaller footprint is one feature that the users are all raving about. You get an extra, I think Apple say 6 gig, and a lot of users are saying you get quite a bit more than that back.
Yeah, but Apple have changed the rules.
Have they?
They've changed the way they define a gig.
Oh,
yes. They've gone from binary to... digital.
Oh,
to,
yeah.
Decimal or whatever it is.
So it's a different,
might,
is it?
They might be. Yeah, because it's a gig instead of a meg being 1,024 kilobytes, it's 1,000.
Well, don't tell Telstra. So,
well, yeah, it's the argument they've been having for years.
The smaller definition.
Yeah, it's the argument they've been having for years, but they've changed it as well. So it is what you're not comparing apples with apples anymore.
Okay. All right.
You can drag and drop items off iCal onto the desktop in Leopard, because I just did it.
Oh, good.
So I'm not sure what they're talking about in Snow Leopard. I'll have to try it.
All right. Well, there you go. There's a few features. Obviously, the Windows 7 side of stuff, I'm still getting used to that. It's available to the public on October the 22nd, but if you do happen to know someone who is a partner, or if your organization is a member of that, Mike, you can get it now.
Mm.
Very. It's a big download. It's about just shy of 3
About 2.4, 2.5 gig, yep. Yeah.
And it just works seamlessly. I cannot fault it. Like normally, you know, you'll probably get the odd thing pop up and annoy you as you go through. But the only thing I have noticed,
there are a few new tricks to learn.
I like the comparison option where you can have two wind browsers and you click and they snap on the left hand side of the screen.
Oh, yes. It's a bit like when it's one of these gestures. If you grab something by the title bar and drag it to either left or the right, it maximizes to half the screen.
Yes. Which is great for when you want to put two things side by side.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. Particularly on a widescreen monitor.
Yeah, see, I've just done it there. It's good for radio.
Expect Apple to pinch that too eventually.
Yeah.
There's something else if you drag straight up or straight down.
If you drag straight to the top, I think it maximizes fully.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's some interesting features. Also, I've noticed when I connected it into the server, I run a Windows 2008 server. So if you're connecting it into a work network or if you're running that sort of stuff, it works really, really well.
Well, of course, server 2008 R2 is on its way out as well. It's also being released. So that's supposedly the server platform that's designed to work with Windows 7. That's the pair that they work with each other.
And yep. There's some fancy stuff there, like there's some kind of VPN feature that only works between Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2, which is basically a VPN without having to switch on a VPN. It just automatically does that kind of thing in the background when you're out of the office.
Nice.
Click on a link. I don't know all the details. I was just reading about it the other day. Mm. So there are some fancy things that you can do, but you have to have Windows 7 and Windows and 2008 R2.
Yep. That doesn't surprise me. That's the stuff that we'll get very excited about very soon.
And that's the way they sell these things. You've got to have the new one.
There was some new updates that came out with Windows Server 2008 as well the other day when I did my updates, because the ability to monitor all your computers on the network through the server platform to make sure that they've all got their virus stuff up to date and they've all got their the rollouts of new updates and things like that is very handy. You can sort of see where it all comes from a 2008 point of view. It's very handy to make sure that things are still
working orderly. This is part of the SBS console in Small Business Server 2008 that you're running, I think, isn't it?
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, it probably is.
It's and
there
was very, very handy.
They're simplifying a lot of the group preferences stuff as well for locking things down and modifying, Andrew, you're entitled to do this. Graham, you're entitled to do that. They're simplifying a lot of that as well.
Yeah, well, they do have a home server version as well. And I think if you've got young kids or young people and you want to monitor internet usage and Wi-Fi usage and stuff like that through the course of the day, you can only log on between certain hours to do your homework, and at 9 o'clock it all turns off. You can do that through these home server things, which is good.
Yeah, unless your kid is about 6, and then they'll be old enough to find a way around it.
Yeah, they just need to know daddy's password, and then they're in trouble. So
my son already looks over my shoulder.
Does he? I've got a fingerprint. I'll have to chop my fingerprint off to get my.
Don't give him ideas.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McColman with Graham and Adam this evening. Dr. Ron passes on his apologies. He's had a better offer, apparently.
He's been detained.
He has. Exploding iPhones are back in the news again.
Hey.
The French in particular. And if you're in Paris, don't iPhones go kaput. But it was also noted by Apple's public relations department that they are adamant that these are not the norm, and that the iPhones that they've actually had a look at, which have exploded, have been unduly coerced into doing so by sitting in people's back pockets or something
Apple's
foreign.
Apple's policy would be Apple does not comment on iPhones that have not exploded yet.
Yeah, deny everything. plausible deniability or whatever it was, that film that came out. So, yeah, but I don't know. How's your iPhone going, Adam?
Fine.
Yeah?
Good.
And the missus is still enjoying the other one?
Yeah, like I said, I'm thinking of moving over from Telstra to Vodafone now that they've got an Edge network. And once I've done that, then there's less incentive to keep everything else with Telstra. So it could get interesting.
Mm. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? We can all jump ship now. We've all got some of us have got iPhones. But you can get them on most networks now, which is probably good.
Yeah, but also that, like, Vodafone and Three are increasing their coverage and stuff like that. I wouldn't touch Optus with a 10-foot pole just because the capacity. they sell and check. They're writing checks that their network can't cash.
Well, that's I'd have to concur with that. One of the guys I work with in the office, he's on that network. And everything he can do, I can do 10 times faster, and I'm not on a fast network.
So. Vodafone and Three are interesting ones to watch, and obviously what's going to happen with them in the next few years.
Yeah, their networks just haven't been big enough to be practical yet. They only work in the centre of the city, but if that's...
With
the merge and with all that changing, with Vodafone rolling out extra coverage...
That's what we've got to see, what happens with the merge and what they keep, what they throw
exactly,
away.
Exactly, yeah. So it's...
It's wait and see at the moment. If you're locked into a contract with someone for the next year or so, I wouldn't be too stressed, because it's another year or so before we'll really get an idea of what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
Exciting times, really, isn't it? All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the most dangerous celebrities on the internet. Woohoo!
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah,
it'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
But I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government.
Yeah. I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm on 8 meg. Or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's loveliest technology radio show.
It is very good evening to you if you've just joined us, or if you're listening to us live in New Zealand. Hello to everyone in the North Island around listening to us on Magic FM up there. We go live up there. And hello to everyone else listening to us on the podcast and delayed through Cairns FM and all sorts of other great stations around the countryside as well too. Welcome, wherever you are. Come and join us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We've been talking all about, if you've just joined us, you've just missed a fairly interesting chat we've had about the Windows operating system, Windows 7, which is available now to some of the industry people, and also the new cat, the Snow Leopard, which is on the market, which if you've got a disk that works, chances are you've been able to see what it's like. So
if you've got a computer that you're thinking about upgrading the operating system on, either to Windows 7 or to Snow Leopard, go grab the podcast and go and have a listen to that last segment of the show you just
absolutely
missed.
Absolutely. we're just going to move on to some of the more humorous side of things of the internet, which I find is amazing. We're talking about malware a bit earlier and how the new systems deal with it. Some of the most dangerous celebrities to search for online.
I'm going to search for this girl now because I don't know who she is.
No, neither do I. Does anyone know who Jessica Biel is? That's spelt, obviously, Jessica, how Jessica's spelled, but Biel, B-I-E-L. Allegedly is the most dangerous celebrity on the internet.
I can see why.
Oh, there's people all around the country going, resist, resist.
Image results.
Yeah. According to security technology company McAfee's online search is for the actress who is dating Justin Timberlake, more likely to spread computer viruses than any other star. That's a pretty good, accolade to hang on your Hall of Fame, isn't it? Oh, it's a virus.
Yeah, it looks like you could catch something.
Yes.
Looking through the filmography, it's pretty much the most useful thing she's done.
Yep. Now, this is the difference between me and Graham. Graham's looking at a list of movies. I'm looking at her photos on Google Pics. There's the difference right there.
But you've both come to drawn the same conclusion that you can tell why she's obviously, drawn McAfee's attention.
She was in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, apparently.
Oh, there you go. Classy girl. Obviously.
Yes.
Anyway, she's the most dangerous person on the internet, and let's go through a few of I'll go in reverse order here, just from 10 upwards, just so you know who not to search for, because if you do search for them, chances are you'll get something nasty knocking on your door. Number 10 was Brad Pitt. He's not too flash. Number 9 was Ashley Tisdale.
Who?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Number 8, you'll know who this one is, Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
Number 8 was Megan Fox. Number 7, kiddies, steer clear of Miley Cyrus. Number 6...
that's good advice on any given day, really.
Yeah. Have you seen that Saturday morning stuff? Anyway, number 6 is someone who I can't even pronounce, which is looks like Geisel Budgeon, if I'm doing anyone's name.
Guy Sebastian?
No. He too. You wouldn't go there anyway, but not for that reason. Geisel spelled G-I-S-E-L-E, and the surname is Bundchen, B-U-N-D-C-H-E-N.
Don't listen to him.
Giselle? I think.
Giselle. Yeah, that could be it. Number, obviously, you can tell I don't know who on earth she is. Number 5, we're talking about the list of most dangerous celebrities online. Number 5 comes in as Jessica Simpson.
Not going to bother searching for her.
Number 4 is Tom Brady. Who's Tom Brady? I've never heard of him. No, don't cry. He's off he goes. Can't help himself.
Don't Google the question.
Yeah. number 3, Jennifer Aniston. Friends chick.
One.
Yeah, the Friends chickie, babe.
Tom Brady he plays American thugby of some kind.
Really? Obviously not known in this country. Well, not known to me anyway. Number 2, Beyonce Knowles.
He's a quarterback, whatever that means. Sorry.
She's a quarterback?
Football. No.
Beyonce? She could be a quarterback.
Yes, possibly. No, Tom Brady.
She could be anything you want, really. But that's Beyonce Knowles at number 2. And, of course, the number 1 person not to search for on the internet is Jessica Biel. Who you've worked out who she is now.
Yes.
There you go. It's interesting. There's probably all sorts of other things like get Firefox and don't go to the Chinese circus.
Paris Hilton's not on that list.
Really?
Maybe it's too obvious. Maybe even stupid people wouldn't fall for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paris Hilton. Now, she's done the brand a bit of a disservice, hasn't she? So... all right, in the wrap-up coming up, because we haven't got that much longer to go tonight, let's just talk a little bit about, a few interesting things. Mr. Conroy, the senator who is not lost in the snow at the moment, and which is a bit of a shame, really.
I wouldn't joke about that because he might turn out to not come back and then you're the guy who joked about it.
Yes, you're very right there.
Cut that out of the podcast.
Okay. Senator Conroy, one of our federal politicians, has announced that 53% of Australian households... have converted to digital television.
Which means 47% haven't.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, the half full, people.
Absolutely. Obviously, they know what's on Go, so they haven't converted. So, actually, my kids like Go.
Yeah, some people might like watching Seinfeld.
I dream of Jeannie over and over and over.
No, I've Tom and Jerry's on in the mornings. Which is the old real Tom and Jerry stuff, not this...
The old school stuff.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, some of the old Warner Brothers stuff. But they also have the evil Warner Brothers cartoons on. I don't know whether you've seen the Daffy Duck and Roadrunner and Bugs Bunny that's all dressed up as superheroes and they... Oh, you just don't...
Not Duck Dodgers.
No.
Because that was good stuff, Duck Dodgers.
No. It's more modern and it's a bit... very dark. No, very dark, yeah. Bugs Bunny.
Now, can I just get you to correctly state the name of the channel that you're talking about again?
Go.
Go!
Go! Go!
That's the one. Yep, that's now that's wrong. Better. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, there you go. So, people, you've still got... Well, if you're living in regional South Australia, you haven't got long to go. You've only got about 6 months. I think it gets turned off Christmas time. So, four months, South Australians. Unless you're living in Adelaide, then you got to 2013. So, now, another interesting
they're
thing...
They're going to have to do a lot better. Because when they showed the take-up between this survey and the last survey, in 3 months, whatever, had gone up like 3 or 4%. And they're only halfway there. They're really going to have to accelerate the take up.
Well, they had an advertising campaign that's disappeared.
Yeah, to get anywhere near to 100% within the time, they're going to have to really accelerate the take up.
There's a roaring trade happening in the United States at the moment too, which I've seen in relation because they turned their digital TV off. The analog TV off just recently, so it's digital only. There's guys out there making an absolute fortune. Driving around selling set-top boxes out of the back of trucks and plugging them in and turning them on for people. So
yeah, for people who aren't confident with plugging it in, yeah. Although it's not that hard, people. You can figure it out. It'll
probably happen here too. Buy a television, which has got
a business model.
Yeah. now, here's something which...
you can buy a set-top box in the supermarket alongside the Wheaties. It's,
Well, for $40 or $50
it might not be any good, but...
It'd work. It'd get you go. And
it'd look better than the football did in the pub the other night. Oh, they have a terrible Foxtel standard definition on a badly tuned television stretched from 4x3 to 16x9. Man, I just was not drunk enough to be distracted by the football. The picture was so bad, I couldn't concentrate.
That is one thing
on the
that really annoys me. People out there, anybody, learn the meaning of the term aspect ratio. Look it up.
It's funny, we did a recent hotel crawl around Victoria. Going to a few places as we do with on family junkets.
Yes.
And you stop off at these funny little hotels and motels, even some of the bigger places like resorts and things.
Yep, and they've got
widescreen
pictures crunched with.
But no, they buy the cheapest, nastiest widescreen brandless names you've ever heard of.
And then take a 4x3 picture
and
go
stretch it.
That's
on
it. That's exactly it. That's probably exactly what you're watching in the
like
pub the other night.
Into a Dick Smith. The way they set up the TVs, I'm surprised they sell anything. I've got a theory. I might get sued for this, but I'm sure that I've had people
views expressed
say that
Adam's own.
Absolutely.
Sometimes when you go into some stores, some televisions look better than others. Maybe not a coincidence. That's what I hear.
Conspiracy.
Yeah, I think I've heard bigger conspiracy theories than that.
Did you know that
like the most plausible ones?
Well, the moon landing was a farce, wasn't it? According to Dr. Ryan.
And so were all those SMSs. They were all faked.
Absolutely.
Good grief. I think that we need a statutory authority in Australia to go around and police people who are displaying things in the wrong aspect ratio.
Authorised to slap people.
Authorised to slap and or hang offenders.
Well, the problem will go away when they turn analog off, won't it?
No. Stupid people will still be around.
I'll leave now. I figured they couldn't, because if you look at the Go watermark, they've put that very much down the bottom of the right-hand corner, which is way outside of, say, 4x3.
They'll still get the zoom settings wrong in the television.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Chop off the top and the bottom and the
maybe
left
the
and the
manufacturers
right and the
should be able to save us all by removing those zoom settings, because what do you need them for in the first place?
I was in a place the other day, and they had a one big widescreen TV, which was showing a 4:3 picture, which was correctly pillar boxed with black bars down the sides. But then in other places around, they had the same picture on a 4:3 screen, crunched so that everybody was really tall
nice
and thin
and tall.
With pillar box bars down the side. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Ooh.
The girls like that look, tall and thin. It doesn't. Yeah, they love looking at themselves back, and no, in our office they do anyway. That's good. So they're nice and skinny there. I think it works for everybody in the office, just quietly, not just girls alone. and another interesting thing, just before we go, there's another. We all like good reports in Tech Talk Radio Land. There's another one which has just come out here about multitasking. Now, we're not talking about computers. We're talking about human beings here.
Because I got a quad core processor in my machine, so I could multitask.
Can you? Well, it's good. Well, multitaskers.
Sorry, what did you say? I was checking my email.
Exactly. Multitaskers of media activities like watching YouTube, checking email, and it's just what it says here: writing email and talking on the phone are not very good at doing any of their tasks, according to a Stanford University report. Now, my wife will certainly concur with this.
How many other things was he doing while he was writing the report?
I don't know. Researchers who published the report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, ooh, sounds impressive, said that the results had surprised them. They were looking for the secret to good multimedia multitaskers, but instead found broad-based incompetence.
Oh, dear.
Heavy multitaskers are lousy at multitasking. The more you do, the worse you get. This is according to Clifford Nass, who's the professor at Stanford University who did this research. Compulsive media multitaskers are worse at focusing their attention, worse at organizing information, and worse at quickly switching between tasks. After testing about 100 Stanford students, the scientists concluded that the chronic media multitaskers have difficulty focusing and are not able to ignore irrelevant information, which means you go for a wilf.
But he's saying media multitasking. So does he mean specifically watching video in the corner of the screen
that,
or something?
I'm assuming that he refers to YouTubers and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, but no one could do that. When I say multitasking, I mean I'm writing a story, but I've also got a thing popping up telling me I've got an email or telling me I've got an instant message and I'm downloading something in the background. I've got to remember something I've got to do. That's my definition of multitasking. My definition of multitasking is not trying to watch a blog post and write a blog post and watch I Dream of Jeannie on Go at the same time.
Oh, very good. I must admit,
that's what people tend to do these days.
Obviously, that's what the report's saying. This is what people are doing. No wonder they can't do it.
But don't you find this, that you're more and more, you don't just sit and watch television. You've also got your notebook open and checking
absolutely.
Your email and all
but
that
I'm
sort
not
of
trying
stuff.
To work while I'm doing that.
Yeah, oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
I must admit, I'm in the multimedia business because we do a lot of that stuff at work, and we're doing many things at once. We have a saying in our office now that the ability to multitask is the ability to stuff lots of things up at the same time. So.
Yes, if it's really important, concentrate
absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely.
Going back to what you said before, I think cats are going to go out of business because no one needs a cat to keep their lap warm anymore while they're watching the TV. That's what the notebook's for.
Oh, I see. Yep. That's interesting.
Keeps your knees warm, as I've said in previous promos, yes. Doesn't it?
And then the really hot ones will roast your chestnuts.
Oh, they do indeed. Yes, exactly. Just briefly, because we're really out of time now, Sony unveiled 5 new Blu-ray recorders and 1 Blu-ray player. Isn't that exciting?
That is exciting. I can't wait till I can get a Blu-ray writer in my computer. That's what I want next.
Is that Blu-ray recorders in Australia?
Sony engineers have been pretty busy lately, having announced that they will be unleashing 5 Blu-ray recorders and a Blu-ray player next month. Their BDP S360 will take prominence. The Blu-ray player will roll out on the 5th of September and is tipped to retail for around $320.
Australian.
I'm assuming this is US.
Yeah, because we haven't seen it. The only manufacturer that's selling Blu-ray recorders in Australia is Panasonic.
Well, there you go. There's a Sony one, which is destined for a set top near you. We're going to come back with Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week after all this.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, really? If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was all too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. I like knowing where Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
I have a good gadget for you, gentlemen, because Dr. Ron's not here tonight. He normally does these.
Yeah, what's the gadget?
The gadget is a photo frame.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Not
I've seen digital photo frames before.
Yeah, not another one of those, you're saying. Well, this photo frame's different. You actually take a photo with the photo frame.
You're kidding me.
No, okay.
This is a photo frame with a camera built into the top of the photo frame, says he, holding it up to the studio. But basically what you do, the mint photo frame concept surely beats others hands down. Not only because it's capable of displaying your favourite photograph, but It can also take a snap on the spot. It looks really funny, actually. Could you imagine? Hang on there for a second as you hold your photo frame up to you.
But that's the thing, is you look at the photo on that photo frame, there's no way that that photo could have been taken with the photo frame. The angle's all on. It's like trying to take a photo of something with the webcam on your notebook. You're always looking up your nose and everything's out of whack and it's got a cheap lens. You could never take a good photo with it.
Absolutely.
Unless, as you said, you maybe held it up like a camera.
Absolutely. And that's my argument because, you know, finally a photo frame with a camera in it. Now, my goodness
me. This makes my butt look big.
But, yes, you can take a photo with it. It's got a 7-inch touch screen display with the ability to record a short voice clip for narration to your photos. Sounds great in theory, but 2 megapixels in this day and age, don't think it cuts it. It's a bit like an iPhone,
that would
it?
Look bad even on a 7-inch.
Yeah, there you go. I just thought that was rather humorous. At long last, someone's come out with a photo frame that actually takes photographs.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Okay, you might want a pen to write down this address. It's because it's a big, huge, long one, so I'm going to give you the short version. It's http://bit.ly/6QI7. I'll give it again in a minute.
The link's to a site called techradar.com.
Now, what it is it's 50 tips. It's the 50 Windows 7 tips and tricks and secrets. It's basically everything you need to know. There's tips there for experts. There's tips there for mums and dads. There's tips there for everybody. You know, all the little things you can do that you just wouldn't know about unless you read them somewhere, and it'll really make your life using Windows 7 a lot easier, and you'll find some really good things in there that you can do. So, yeah, 50 Windows 7 tips, tricks, and secrets. It's at http://bit.ly/6QI7. And if you can't get that link, it'll be in the show notes on the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
One of the most bizarre things that Microsoft has ever done, apart from the Zune, is they've had an advertising campaign which has been running in certain countries around the world. And what they did was they took out, there was a dark-skinned gentleman in the middle of a three-shot, and they've actually photoshopped them out and replaced that person with somebody else for a different marketplace. Now,
but they still left his black hand in there, apparently, on the table.
Oh, did they really?
A white
yes,
guy.
So they changed his head, but not his hand.
His hand, yeah.
Whoopsie-daisy.
They had the light coming from the wrong direction. It was really obvious the wrong photo.
Now, the problem with this is it's become a little bit viral at the moment, and it's actually, there's a lot of people now talking about what other things, and I've even seen some people very creatively been photoshopping Steve Jobs into this sort of...
And Steve Ballmer. I saw Jar Jar Binks dropped into it.
Exactly.
That looked awesome.
So it's certainly started a bit of a viral trek around the world, but the photo on the Seattle-based company's US website shows two men, one Asian and one black man, and a white woman seated at a conference table in a room. But on the website of Microsoft's Polish business unit, the black man's head has been replaced with that of a white man. The colour of his hand remains unchanged, as you just said, Adam. Which is very interesting. Anyway, good on you, Microsoft. That was just a really amazing thing to do. So,
yep.
All right, that concludes our celebrations for the evening. Adam, thank you for coming from one side of town to the other to do the Dr. Ron thing. I think it's been
great.
Thank
you for having me.
And anytime you like, I think it's been really good. Graham, thank you. Happy Windows 70. I'll be doing that.
Thank
we'll probably talk more about that next week. And
definitely.
Hopefully we'll keep an eye on all of Adam's publications for up-and-coming things in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and all that sort of stuff for what he thinks of...
The snow leopard.
The leopard. Mm. The cat. Before they bring out the roadkill. Anyway, until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.